Good afternoon. I'm Callie Crossley. This week, WGBH is kicking off week-long coverage focusing on the MBTA. This hour, we're looking at how the proposed MBTA service cuts and fare hikes could affect our health. I'm joined by Eric Barasa, Director of Transportation Planning for the Metropolitan Area Planning Council, and Mariana Arcaya, Manager of Public Health at the Metropolitan Area Planning Council. She's also a doctoral candidate at the Harvard School of Public Health. The Metropolitan Area Planning Council recently released a health impact assessment based on the proposed MBTA fare hikes and service cuts. Thank you both for joining us.
It's great to be here.
Mariana, let me start with you. What did your assessment determine?
Well, our assessment looked at the ways in which the fare hikes and the service cuts would impact two groups of people. First, we looked at the ways in which these changes would impact all of us, regardless of whether or not people drive, take the T, walk, however they happen to get around. So we looked at things like air pollution, air quality. We looked at things like noise. We looked at carbon emissions. And we looked at the risk of automobile crashes. And those are things that will affect us regionally if the MBTA cuts service or raises fares. And what we found is that there are a number of impacts around congestion-related costs, everyone on the road's going slower, spending more time in traffic. Air pollution will get worse with related health impacts. We expect the number of car crashes to go up and fatalities associated with that. And then there's another set of impacts. We looked at the ways in which people who are currently taking the T but under the proposed scenarios would switch to driving. That's a special set of impacts. So we looked at the loss of regular physical activity that group of 30,000 to 40,000 people would incur. And we looked at the loss of access to healthcare. So we really looked at seven broad areas and found that the costs of cutting service and raising fares would cost the region a whole lot more than we'd save in terms of the actual deficit.
So that's the bottom line, that the actual health costs that could come from as a result of having these other impacts would end up being more expensive than the savings of cutting back on services and raising fare hikes.
Exactly right. On the order of, almost twice as much. So we'd be losing almost twice as much as we would, quote unquote, gain by making those cuts.
All right. We're going to delve into some specificity around each of those areas that you looked at in the health assessment. But, Eric, I wanted to ask you, why does your group even do the assessment? I mean, why does the MBTA request it?
Well, actually, the T didn't request this. We wanted to do this work. The Metropolitan Area Planning Council, we work with 101 cities and towns in Greater Boston around different planning issues, and transportation planning is a big part of that. And increasingly within the field of transportation planning, there is a recognition that the kind of infrastructure we build, whether it be roads or bike lanes or sidewalks, has an impact on public health. And so more and more we are incorporating health impact assessments into our work to try to understand what are the implications of transportation projects and policies. And we're not just talking about the pollution that's emitted from tailpipes, but like Mariana's talked about, physical activity. So if we build sidewalks on where there currently aren't any, what does that mean in terms of getting people out and being more active? So when the T announced in January the two scenarios, we decided to work off of the initial analysis that they did and really hone in on what are the public health implications and impacts of the two fare increase, of the two proposals to raise fares and cut service.
Now, you looked at the two scenarios that the T at that time had proposed, which were one would have been a 43% increase in fares and service reductions would affect between 34 and 48 million trips a year. And under the second one, it would have been 35% fare increase and service reductions would affect between 53 and 64 million trips each year. They, in fact, went to a third scenario,
right,
which ended up with 23% fare service cuts and 5% ridership and cut in the ridership. So What does that mean in light of what you had assessed on the first two scenarios? Are you able to extrapolate what you gathered from the first two and determine what this will mean?
Well, we didn't do a full health impact assessment for the third scenario that the T has put out. And I think the interesting thing, you know, certainly it's better because it has fewer cuts and the fare increase is not as high. And there is a direct relationship between the cost, the fare increase, and the amount of people who end up switching from taking the T to driving instead. But the scenario three that the T has proposed is really dependent on the legislature taking action. There's about $50 million of registry of motor vehicle fees that are unused that they're proposing to take and use and give that to the T just for 1 year to help plug this deficit. So if the legislature doesn't take action, then we're really going to fall back onto the scenario one or two. Which we really think is would have drastic impacts.
That's my guest, Eric Barasa. He's Director of Transportation Planning for the Metropolitan Area Planning Council. And we should say that that's not a guarantee, by the way, that the legislature is going to sign off on this. And even if the legislature does sign off on it, it's a one-year scenario.
That's right.
So we really, in essence, have to deal with the other more significant cuts that you have costed out and looked at in a more thorough way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we're really calling on the legislature to take action on this. But there's a lot of pushback from folks around the state who are saying, hey, these are registry fees that are cut not just from the Boston region, but are coming from other places too. So part of this is try to tell the story of the benefit that the T brings, not just in terms of moving people around, but also from a public health perspective, from economic perspective. But we really wanted to focus on public health because that's such an important area right now.
Well, how has – when you first came out with your report, what kind of response did you get, first of all, from those who might be voting on one way or the other? Did you hear anything from the legislators?
Well, we've had a positive feedback from the report because I think this is not an angle that necessarily comes out right away when people think about transportation.
I don't think it comes out at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually.
So I think people said, oh, this is really interesting. Yeah. And really that's what we've tried to do. We want to bring another perspective through which to view the T and really tell the story of how the T makes our region healthy. And I think that it's information that policymakers are going to use as they weigh, these decisions. So from that, from that standpoint, people have been very supportive of this. But, from the T's perspective, their hands are tied, so they can't really do that much. It's really up to the legislature at this point. And I'm hoping, that they'll be able to act on this.
Mariana, let's go and march through a couple of the factors that you identified that are will have whatever happens here. Scenario one, two, or three goes into place. It's going to have an impact. So the first is obesity, which I have to say, right off the bat, that's not something you think about. You think, as Eric just said, about the bottom line costs. Can I afford to take the T? But I don't think a lot of people are thinking about obesity tied with less T service.
Right. Well, just to step back a second, I think the main thing to understand about why this is potentially a surprise for some people is that when the T, either the fare goes up or the service gets cut, the fundamental driver of the health impact is that there's going to be a shift and some number of people who currently take the T are going to, either for access or price reasons, they're going to switch from being T riders to drivers. And MassDOT actually commissioned an impact study that looked at how many additional miles would be driven in the region, how many hours would it take for drivers to cover that mileage, what would the tailpipe emissions be, and what percentage of the ridership would be lost. And so when MassDOT came out with that impact report, that provided a basis for us to then go out and say, well, what does this mean for health? Can we translate this into health outcomes? And for the obesity findings, that was really calculated based on the number of people MassDOT projected would be going from what we consider an active mode of transportation, which is taking the T, to a sedentary mode, which is driving. And
how is the T active, just to be clear?
Right, of course. So when when you take the T, there is physical activity woven into your daily life. You have to leave your house and you walk or you bike generally. Some people are dropped off, but you know, many people are taking active modes of transportation to the bus stop or the T stop. If you change modes, you have to walk up to your platform, you have to switch lines, and then on the other end of the trip, you walk from your stop to your final destination, maybe your office, and then you repeat this process in the afternoon. And people who are dependent on the T are doing this in the cold, in the hot, in the snow, in the rain. It is regular physical activity in the sense that we don't have to go put on a special outfit. We don't have to take time away from our jobs or our families. It's just something that you do. And so it's an amazingly reliable source of physical activity that people don't even think of as exercise. And so, some, you know, in terms of feedback on the report, we have gotten questions saying, well, if people were to switch from the T to driving, wouldn't they just make up this exercise? And, you know, one answer to that is we don't think of this as exercise. We just think of it as our commute. And so it would be a difficult ask to say, make up something you don't even realize you're losing. And then the second side of it is that we know from behavioral studies that about 50% of people who start a planned exercise regimen will quit that within 6 months. And so as much as we might like for people to carve that special time out and do their exercise, we know that people don't follow through with that in the long term. And what works is just having regular physical activity woven into your daily life in a way that it's not an option. You don't think about it. You don't say, should I do this today? You just do it. And I would actually expand, you know, obesity is one of the outcomes that we looked at as related to this physical activity loss. But I think it's a really important point to say that this is about the loss of physical activity, which has a whole host of health impacts aside from obesity. You know, regular physical activity, it's protective against falls. It increases strength and flexibility in seniors. It helps control blood pressure. It helps control blood sugar. It improves your bone health. It improves your heart health, in addition to helping with weight loss. And there's a whole host of health conditions that are either controlled or prevented through small doses of regular physical activity that are occurring, and you don't even see a weight loss. You don't see a change in your body, but you're doing something good for yourself.
All right. Well, there's some other factors to also be examined, and we're going to do that in just a minute. We're talking about the MBTA and the public health problems that could be created by the proposed fare hikes and service cuts, even though it's less than what was once thought it might be. I'm speaking with Eric Barasa and Mariana Arcaya, and they're with the Metropolitan Area Planning Council, which recently released a health impact assessment based on the MBTA's proposed fare and service changes. You're listening to the Callie Crossley Show on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
Love our contributors. That means you. And Maestro Artist Management, presenting cellist Misha Maisky and viola player Yuri Bashmet in a concert celebrating the 20th anniversary of Moscow Soloists Chamber Orchestra, Sunday, April 29th at 8 p.m., bso.org. And Tivoli Audio.
I think WGBH and all it represents, both in this market and really around the world, is important for our company to be associated with.
Tom DeVesto, founder and CEO.
Tivoli Audio has just started a sponsorship, and we already hear from people regularly that they hear the sponsorship on the radio and really gets to our customers.
To learn more, visit wgbh.org/sponsorship.
This week, WGBH reporter stories and talk shows take on the T with a full week of focus coverage.
Today, how to make the T world class.
Well, I was comparing to New York, and the main difference is New York's a lot bigger. And they have, like, two lanes going in each way at least. So when they have a failure, they can route around it, and we can't route around it. So, like, you have a failure on this line, and you're stuck.
Coming up this afternoon here on 89.7 WGBH.
stretch your dollar from
many towns in western Massachusetts,
a fishing village in China,
to a small island in the South Pacific,
and keep your entire community connected to what's happening around the corner and across the globe. All it takes is a few minutes and a dollar a day as a member of the WGBH Leadership Circle.
The world is getting smaller.
See how far a dollar can take you. Visit wgbh.org/leadership.
When you're curious about technology,
knowing what miniaturization means, I saw that we were all going to be wearing the web.
Explore a world of ideas at the WGBH Forum Network. wgbh.org/forum.
Welcome back to the Callie Crossley Show. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about the MBTA, focusing on how the proposed fare hikes and service cuts could affect our health, from obesity to air pollution. I'm joined by Eric Bourassa, Director of Transportation Planning for the Metropolitan Area Planning Council, and Mariana Arcaya, Manager of Public Health at the Metropolitan Area Planning Council. She's also a doctoral candidate at the Harvard School of Public Health. So, Mariana, before the break, we were saying that there's a loss of obesity is on the chart as one of the increased risks, but it's really a loss of physical activity.
Exactly.
Mirrored in day-to-day walking to and from the T up and down those steps. I know that from going up and down those steps. I use it at least once a week, and those steps will really get you, I can tell you.
Yeah.
So the next thing is the increased congestion and air pollution. So you said a number of people will just go to their cars.
Right.
Now, we know that there's some number of people who can't afford, they don't have a car, they can't, that won't be happening. But for others who have an option, that's exactly what they're going to do.
Right.
And the result is going to be this congestion and then air pollution.
Exactly. And one difference to point out here between the group of people who would be impacted by the loss of physical activity and the people who would be impacted by the increased congestion and air quality is that that group of people who are going to be losing a regular source of physical activity is on the order of 30 to 40,000. But everyone in the region will be impacted by the slower rate of travel, the congestion, and the air quality impacts. And so we looked at how much slower the average car would go once these additional drivers that shifted from the T to cars would be added to the road. And what we found is that a very small reduction in speed on the order of 0.2 miles per hour was expected for all cars. And that when you apply this sort of congestion penalty to everybody who's traveling every day, we're looking at hundreds of millions of dollars of costs in terms of extra time spent in cars and in terms of fuel burned. And so, you know, we looked at that congestion cost, and then we also looked at air pollution. So what we did is we said, if we know this many additional miles will be traveled by cars and we can estimate what the tailpipe emissions are, we said, given what we know about the climate, the wind, the topography, what is that going to translate into in terms of concentrations of these pollutants in the air? And then what are the resulting health impacts from those air quality impacts? And, we found that we would be having about, it's a hard metric to understand, but about 0.2 additional deaths per year under one of the scenarios. So, over the course of a decade, two deaths under the less severe proposed cuts, and then 0.26 additional deaths a year under the more
And this is because of car accidents.
This is because of air pollution
changes. Okay.
On car accidents, we looked at that also, and we found about an additional expected death every year from car crashes alone. But we also have increases in hospitalizations due to cardiovascular events. And so air pollution is not just about asthma and respiratory impacts, as we usually think, well, you breathe it in, and it makes sense that it would cause trouble with your lungs. But the small particles that are in tailpipe emissions, once they get into your body, they are also can increase the risk of cardiovascular events, so heart attacks and stroke, inflammation in the blood system.
So, Eric, if you start talking about car pollution and congestion, what comes to mind is Los Angeles, where you have a scenario that, literally that has to be part of the news every day to alert people who are at highest risk that they just cannot go outside. But here, we're not talking about that yet, but no. You know, but what we have in mind is, as you hear this and you see how fast it can increase, is how long will it take us to go from a, I don't know, we're not at zero, but you know what I mean, to where Los Angeles is, if I'm going to posit it, at 100. It can happen pretty quickly.
Well, I think, you know, one thing we need to recognize is that our region, in terms of the amount of people who take transit, and we're one of the best regions in the country. And that's primarily because we have such a robust public transit system here. But certainly we need to be aware of the air quality impacts of transportation. And as we plan new transportation projects and you know, new roadway expansions, we need to be thinking about that. And we do that. That's an important part of our transportation planning process. I think that a really important thing that we've tried to do with this report is make the point that the T benefits everybody. Even if you don't use it, it's benefiting you. When more people take the T, that means there are less cars on the road. And that's good because you're not stuck in traffic if you're a motorist. And that's good because the air quality is improved. And that's good because there's more people using, you know, taking physical activity. And, you know, in the grand scheme of things, that's going to mean our healthcare costs are all done. And that's kind of the picture that we've tried to paint with this report, is that taking the T and having a robust public transit system is good for everyone in the region.
Now, how do you make that case, though, to the folks beyond the
T service area?
Yes,
yeah.
Beyond the T service area. Who, I mean, it's no secret, a number of people have said, these are the people holding the cards on whether or not this 1 year budget thing is going to happen or not. Because they're looking at their constituents and say, we don't ride it. Maybe we use a commuter rail every now and then, and there are some service cuts to that and some increased fares that are going to happen as a result of that. But, hey, not affecting us, not our problem. So, you know, make the case to them.
Right.
You've said, yeah, it affects everybody. From both of you have said that. But, you know, it's hard from somebody sitting way outside.
In Pittsfield,
right.
You know, what is the benefit
yeah.
for me? Yeah, I mean, I think that's when it becomes more challenging. And I think when you go out there and talk to folks and they say, geez, you know, I'm already paying, you know, a piece of the sales tax that goes to the T, and that doesn't benefit me here in, you know, Western Massachusetts. You know, we do try to talk about, well, the economy of Boston, you know, helps the whole state as a whole. But that's still, I think, a difficult argument for some people, you know, out there. I think that, you know, when we look at, you know, the benefits of, you know, the benefits of the T, it really is a statewide benefit.
And if I may, what Mariana has been talking about is that, you know, how asthma is not just asthma, but it's all these other things if there's congestion and air pollution. But what you have done is quantify what service reduction and fare hikes mean. So in other words, there's a bottom line to the risk. If you add up how many more deaths, and I have to say, Mariana, so you say, you know, 2 deaths, 6 deaths. To some people listening, that seems like, really? Okay. I don't want to be those 2 or 6, but that's not a huge number. But you're talking about in the aggregate amount added to the other risks that you name, there is actually a number attached to it, which you did attach to the 2 scenarios that the T had put out at first. So that there is a number. It costs a lot of money to incur these higher risks. So if you could speak to that, that's something I think is important.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is that our single highest financial cost was this cost to people who already drive their cars that's associated with going slower simply because of congestion. And so when we assessed this number, we said we're not even going to look at the additional hours that the people who are now taking the T will spend potentially next year in their car. We're just going to look at those veteran commuters, the people who have been going about their daily lives, driving to work every day, and what's the impact to those people? And, you know, we found that that cost alone is, you know, $137 million under one of the scenarios, $185 million under the more severe scenario. And this is a rate for, you know, trucks where we're paying people $92 an hour. The cost of that truck driver, the cost of for the passenger vehicle, for people to just sit in traffic. And so that was almost a surprise for us, because we thought these are costs that are not impacting T riders. These are costs that are impacting drivers, and they're not just impacting drivers around the city of Boston, this is a regional impact. And so our executive director at MAPC likes to say that even if when you're in your car, what's getting you to work on time is the T. What's getting you to work on time and quickly is the T. So I think we need to start thinking of it that way. And we need to start thinking about the T as not just about it moving people around, but it's an economic resource, it's a health resource. And, you know, honestly, it's an equity issue as well. We looked at people who would be essentially cut off from the healthcare system if the proposed service cuts went into effect, and that we found we're talking about hundreds, if not thousands, of households who don't have cars that would be isolated from basic medical services. They would need to rent a car, take a taxi, or skip an appointment.
Or do without, yes. Just skip
right.
it, yeah.
And you know, with that was one of the only aspects of our report that looked at equity and sort of who's disproportionately affected, because so many of the impacts we found really were, you know, statewide, region-wide, kind of hurting all of us just a little bit. But there are also groups of people that are disproportionately affected. And in terms of the access to the healthcare system, I think one of the big concerns we have is that, you know, in a medical emergency, you can call an ambulance and somebody will come take you to the hospital. But when we're talking about healthcare costs and prevention and bringing down costs and increasing improving outcomes for everybody, to make those preventative visits, primary care visits, maintenance visits harder, less convenient, more expensive to get to, that's the wrong direction. Mm. And so we need to be thinking both about the sort of statewide regional impact. We also need to be thinking about which groups of people are being impacted here more so than others.
You're listening to 89.7 WGBH and online at WGBH.org. I'm Callie Crossley. We're looking at how the proposed MBTA service cuts and fare hikes could affect our health. I'm joined by Eric Barassa, Director of Transportation Planning for the Metropolitan Area Planning Council, and Mariana Arcaya, Manager of Public Health at the Metropolitan Area Planning Council. Now, Eric, you mentioned before that these kinds of studies you've done for other cities or have been done for other cities. Is there any place where, after having done the study, somebody heard it, who can make some decisions and implemented something based on what you were able to prove from a bottom line way was going to be harmful?
Are you talking specifically about health impact assessments?
Yes,
and
yes.
In terms
yes.
of how that's being applied to transportation planning?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, there's a number of examples, and you know, from around the country, but even more particularly here in Massachusetts, this is a, you know, like I said, this is sort of a growing field. And the state actually has made more of an emphasis to try to incorporate this. And a couple years ago, they created what's called the Healthy Transportation Compact. And it's actually the combination of the Secretary of Transportation, Health and Human Services, and Energy and the Environment get together. And they've created a series of really goals to try to look at health from the from the transportation perspective. One area where this is being done right now is looking at the de-elevation of the McGrath Highway, Route 28, as it sort of goes through Somerville and into Boston. And there's a study being done to look at actually turning that more into an urban boulevard than a separated highway. And what does that mean for health if we have more walking and there's more biking in that corridor than just car travel? That's one area. Another area where we've really looked at health is through a number of the improvements to the bridges over the Charles River. So the Longfellow Bridge, when that was originally redesigned, it's getting a $200 million improvement. But when it was originally designed to be improved a couple of years ago, it basically was the same bridge it is, you know, just the same lanes. And there was a big movement to say, hey, let's really relook at this in terms of trying to get more people using that bridge than just motorists. And now the design is actually to reduce a lane on the outbound from Boston into Cambridge so that we can make the sidewalk wider and we can add a much wider bike lane. And the same is sort of being done on the other side, although the two lanes are being kept there. But those are some of the things that are being woven into transportation planning and actually, you know, making decisions. And a lot of times it comes down to trade-offs. Do we take parking to add a bike lane or make a sidewalk wider? And those become very controversial, very local issues. But we're more and more we're looking at it through the perspective of public health. Obviously, it's, you know, pedestrian safety and motorist safety is a big part of this. But what does that mean for encouraging people to get out and just walk more? I mean, Mariana and the work that she's done and the research, you know, is amazing to see that just the average person walks so little every day. I mean, it's something like less than 10 minutes a day the average American walks. And so if we're going to create the environment that's going to encourage more of that, we're going to see benefits and from healthy activity.
So when you talk about trade-offs, I'm thinking it's good in a city to, you know, take some parking and have some bike lanes. All that's good. But when you have an economic situation where there's cutbacks everywhere, and then now people are a certain group of people, we be clear, not everybody is going to be able to afford to go to their car. But there are people that just have to get some places and they just cannot be accommodated in a timely fashion by the T if the cutbacks go into place. This is people probably more impacted by the service cutbacks as opposed to the fare increase. And so they go to their cars and now they can't park anywhere. I mean, I'm serious. I mean, how do we do this? We got to think about this. When people were thinking about taking away parking for cyclists, it was more during a better economic time. And now we're squeezed on all ends. You see what I'm talking about?
No, absolutely. And, you know, certainly when we do planning, you know, in the city, in Boston or Cambridge, in the dense area. I mean, that's where you literally don't have the space. You have to, you know, you have to make trade-offs, and you have to be smart about it and recognize where is there parking. You know, we as a planning agency, when we look at development projects, we're big proponents of structured parking and shared parking, so that, you know, it might be a parking lot that, you know, people who live in the area use, but then during the day they might be gone, and then shoppers in that area can use the parking lot too.
So like a bank parking lot at night.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're just being smart about how we use that. But you're absolutely right. I mean, it's about trade-offs, and we have to be cognizant of what's the best use of that space. But I would argue that in many of our communities, we've got a lot of on-street parking, and I'm not just talking about, you know, South Boston where you know people will kill you over their parking spot. But I'm talking about some of the communities, you know, just outside the city in Arlington and Belmont and, you know, even in like areas like Natick where, you know, people want to cycle more. They want to connect to transit and people aren't just T riders or motorists. They're both. And, you know, the thing that's going to make more people take transit is improving a lot of those connections and bike lanes and more sidewalks and improved sidewalks are the way that's going to facilitate that.
Mariana, do you think that we're at a point now where health considerations, where the risk that you've outlined here will either rise or be equal to being looked at the same time we talk about other bottom line considerations?
Right. Well, I'm hopeful that they, you know, will be elevated and prioritized among policymakers. And, you know, when you asked about the reaction that we've gotten to this report, we were really lucky to have Rep. Jason Lewis sponsor a State House briefing to release this report. You know, we have the legislature talking about public health a lot now with the Public Health Prevention Caucus. You know, as we're talking about payment reform, these issues are coming up, and there are a lot of groups, sort of non-traditional allies working together to say, you know, you're talking about transportation, I'm talking about public health, you're talking about local economic development. Oh my goodness, we're talking about the same thing. You know, we're talking about communities that encourage, you know, choices in terms of how people get around. If you want to walk, bike, take the T, drive, that, you know, people have options that support, you know, livability and sustainability. And so from a lot of different angles, there are different factions from physicians to planners to student groups who are saying we kind of are all looking for the same outcomes. And so I think the public health community is really learning how to work with transportation planners. You know, we went to a MassDOT hearing to sort of brief people. We came out with this report. We came out with this health impact assessment. And Eric and I had signed up to give a few words. And before they even got to us on the list, three different groups had gotten up and said, this report was released yesterday showing that there are going to be health impacts if you cut the T. So it really shocked me, at least, how quickly the findings got out there and the number of different types of groups that have take in the report and try to use it for advocacy purposes, everything from healthcare workers to health justice groups. So it's been really interesting for us. And I do think the more that we can work across disciplines and say, you know, this isn't really about transportation and it isn't just about economy. It isn't just about cycling or, you know, pedestrian activist groups. This is about overall well-being and livable communities. I mean, the more I think health concerns will be elevated.
Eric, will you all do another report once the final numbers are in place?
Well, that's something to consider. I think if the T, whatever they finally adopt, I think we will try to analyze it and really say, okay, is this, you know, is this better? Is this worse than what was, you know, originally proposed? So we can understand that.
All right. I don't think this is the last word on this subject. Thank you both very much. I'm Callie Crossley. We've been talking about the MBTA and how the proposed service hikes and fare cuts could affect our health. I've been speaking with Eric Barasa and Mariana Arcaya. Eric Barasa is the Director of Transportation Planning for the Metropolitan Area Planning Council. Mariana Arcaya is Manager of Public Health at the Metropolitan Area Planning Council as well. She's also a doctoral candidate at the Harvard School of Public Health. Coming up, we continue the conversation with Colin Kingsbury. For all the good things that public transportation has to offer, he can't help but sing the praises of cruising the Commonwealth by car. You're listening to 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.